I hope you have got your Bibles with you. Turn with me to Revelation 17. If you remember some time back, we mentioned Karl Marx. He's the father of communism, really. And how communism itself has exterminated many, many Jews, much more than Hitler. But there was something that Karl Marx said, and there's some truth when he said, let me quote him saying, that opium is, sorry, religion is the opium of the people. And there is some truth in it, because God has created in all of us a God-shaped vacuum in our hearts. And unless that vacuum is being filled, constantly we try to fill it up. And if we are not worshipping the true and living God of the Bible, then we'll be finding substitutes. And that's how religion comes about. And today, we have more religions than you can imagine. And this is a sad part. And today, this will be the subject of our study. The false religion, as we see it today, but it will become very dominant in the last days. So, as we've got a Bible open, let's look to God in prayer. Father, we thank you. We thank you that you've created all of us with a vacuum that only you can fill. And today we're thankful that Jesus has come into our lives and that vacuum is completely filled. We just want to pray right now that having Jesus in us is great. But we want Jesus to have us. So that's why we're here Sunday after Sunday. And Lord, I want to thank you for my brothers and my sisters here, for their love for you and your word. And as we study, Lord, we ask that today you will surprise us. You will teach us precious lessons that you would want each and every one of us to take home, so that our lives, as we respond to you, our lives will be changed. Changed into the very likeness of your Son, Jesus Christ. And truly, that's our desire. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. False religions has its roots, and we are going to find out many. In fact, all of the false religions will have its roots in Babylon. And when we say Babylon, we are thinking of the literal, the physical city of Babylon. But of course, it has got other implications as well, which we will see. And Babylon really started by this person called Nimrod, Genesis chapter 10. Nimrod went to a place called the Plain of Shinar, which really is another name for Babylon. And Nimrod, you'll be surprised to hear that he is actually the great-grandson of Noah. And he rebelled against God by calling the people together to build the famous Leaning Tower of Pisa. Am I correct? No, it's a Tower of Babel. All right, pizza makes you hungry, isn't it? I'm going to show you a couple of pictures, but first some maps so that you and I can have an idea of where is Babylon. You can see the river Euphrates here, Euphrates, and the Tigris. Babylon is here. Can you see it? All right. It's many cities, even in Singapore, it started by the river for obvious reasons. And you have got Canaan here, and you can see modern Iraq, and Iran is over here, Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, all right? So That's where Babylon is, and today it's a huge city. This is a satellite picture of the ancient Babylon. This is exactly the place where King Nebuchadnezzar lived and where he built the famous Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which became one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Right? If there are many pictures, drawings really, not we don't really know how it looks like, but they have found the foundations of this ancient city. And today, they are trying to rebuild it for various reasons. And you'll be shocked that, to find that in the Bible, there are prophecies about Babylon, that Babylon will be utterly, completely destroyed. Right? But that prophecy has got a near-term fulfillment and a final fulfillment. And we find that it has been destroyed, and God said there will be no one allowed to stay there anymore. But today, we find a couple of years back, some 4 or 5 years back, we've got one wise guy who tried to rebuild it. And his name is Saddam Hussein, all right? Okay? God dealt with him in various ways. And if you go to this ancient ruins today, this is what you will find. And I want you to look at this gate. It's a reconstruction, all right? It's not the real thing. And they think it looks like this. But in this position, it is correct. It's called the Gate of Ishtar. And I want you to remember that name, because we are going to come back to this name. It's an important name, all right? The Gate of Ishtar. And these are all Iraqi soldiers. And I'll take you inside. These are all the ruins, and some has been restored. All right? And there are people clearing up the gutters. This is a drain leading from the Gate of Ishtar. Right? And this photograph was only taken in 2012. Pretty recent. Right? So, and you can see a lot of reconstructions, and this is what they found, discovered, and these are all the people who are trying to do the restoration. And from far away, you can see this is a modern road, right? And these are the ancient ruins. Can you see all this? Okay, they are still in the process. So the question that you want to ask is, with all these things, it's going to cost money. Who's paying for them? And of course, initially when it was mooted by various parties coming together with Iraq, we have got UNESCO pumping money in, and the US government pumping at least $700,000 for the restoration, which is not much, but later on how much they pump in, we really don't know. But there are various parties who are putting money in for what various reasons, like making it into a tourist attraction for cultural heritage reasons, right? Many of these are restored. And it is frightening, because this is the ancient site of where and what we are going to study today. And this is the last one, all right? You can see some soldiers. This is taken during the invasion, all right, of Iraq. Okay. So much of the foundation is pretty intact. So what is the important thing about Babylon? And in the next two studies, this is what we are going to study. It's important. And I just want to take you back quickly. You would remember that at the beginning of our study, we started the three sets of judgments. It started with the seal judgments, isn't it? The seven seals. The seven seals having been broken, the seventh and the last seal opens up to the seven trumpets judgment. All right, so seven seals, seven trumpets, and the last trumpet, when it is sounded, it opens up to the seven bowls judgment. I hope you can see the big picture. All right, and in this, that's what we did in our last study. the seven bowls judgment, and it's horrifying just to read it. And today we are going to chapters 17 only. Well, 17 and 18 actually will take us back a little to tell us what is happening simultaneously together as the bowl judgments were being poured out. Is that all right? So I hope you follow me, because if not, then you will find it hard to fit in the events and the chronology, when did it happen, and all this. So follow me closely. Today, in the next two studies, 17 and 18, it's going to take us back. Because after the last bowl judgment, the only thing that is left is Armageddon. All right? And then after Armageddon, Jesus Christ will come. All right? Second coming. So that would be the chronology for our study. All right? So stay with me. Babylon, really, when we speak of Babylon, it's a literal city. Right? And in the last days, we are going to see the emergence of a world system which is both spiritual and also demonic. And we have said that when Satan came to dominate the whole world, he has got three plans. And the first one is to start a one world religion, which is what we're going to study today. And the false prophet is the key player. And we're going to find out that in this chapter today, God calls him the prostitute. All right? The prostitute. And today I'm going to use that word so often that I've never used it so often in my whole life. All right. So if you're uncomfortable, just, you know, switch off. All right. And then he will raise up a one world government under the Antichrist. And that is the political arm, the political power of Satan. And they are going to control the world with a one world economy. And you remember that the world's economy will be controlled by those who take on the mark of the beast, which is 666. So in reality, Babylon represents both a religious and a political system. But this religious system is actually godless. And you and I need to remember that this study that we're going to do, the good news is that God is going to destroy this one world religious system. And in our next study in chapter 18, God will destroy the one world government and the one world economy. All with one clean swipe of the sickle. You remember the sickle? Jesus swung the sickle and he gave the signal for everybody to harvest all the evil people in the world. So today, we are just going to focus on how God is going to take down the false prophet, the prostitute. Revelation 17, verse 1. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, "Come, I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters." One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls. So after the seven bowls have been poured out, one of them came up to John and said, "Come, I'm going to show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters." It's about the punishment of the great prostitute, the false prophet. And in some of your translations, the word prostitute may be, they may use the word harlot or whore. All right? But don't use all these words on people. All right? You get into big trouble. All right? So in chapter 16, the previous chapter we just did, you would remember that Babylon was split into three parts. by the great earthquake. And today, in this verse 1, we are going to go back a little bit so that the angel is going to fill us in on the details of how the destruction came about. But interesting that he said that Babylon, the great prostitute, sits on many waters. So what does it mean by sitting on many waters? But first, I just want to deal with put this aside with a bit of an understanding about the word prostitute. We do understand it in the physical sense today, but in the spiritual sense, God really is thinking of apostasy, all right? Apostasy, or a person who is called an apostate. Apostate is a person who abandons his faith. That means he was in church, he was following Jesus, and then he defected. He abandoned Jesus, all right? And he forsook Jesus. And in the Bible, God often used this term on the nation of Israel when she ran after false gods. But during the tribulation, during that 7 years, we are going to see a rise of a false one world religious system. And all the religions in the world will come together and combine and place themselves under the leadership of this false prophet, this prostitute, who is also known as the harlot. It's the same word, all right? So don't be troubled by it. When the Bible says she sits on many waters, what does it mean? And if you go down a little bit in the same chapter, chapter 17, verse 15, God explains this to us. And the angel said to me, the waters you saw where the prostitute sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages. What does it mean? It simply means that the prostitute is in control over a vast majority of people from all over the world. And I'm going to say this very slowly, and I hope you catch this. Because the tragic part is that it includes a part of the church. There will be some people from the church of Jesus Christ who will go after the harlot. It's so tragic, and sometimes we don't want to believe in it, that how can the church be a part of the one world false religion? We find Paul speaking about this in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come. That day, the day of the Lord, the terrible day of the Lord. It could mean the second coming. It could mean a couple of things, but that terrible day, the last day, will not come unless the falling away comes first. Even before Jesus Christ comes, there will be a great falling away. Christians will fall away from their faith. And in the NASB, it is the word apostasy, all right? The abandoning of your faith. And the thing that you and I have to ask ourselves is, will it happen to me? Today we sit here and all of us, we say, oh, I love Jesus with all my heart, with all my soul, and with all my mind. But Paul says, one day, there'll be a lot of people who are in churches, seemingly on fire. But Paul says they will fall away. Will that happen to you? Will that happen to me? The second verse, chapter 17, tells us that this religious prostitute also controls the political powers too. Look at verse 2. With her, the kings of the earth committed adultery, and the inhabitants of the earth were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries. Notice that she dominates and controls even the kings, the political powers of those days. And these kings will be seduced and deceived into rejecting God so that they can worship the beast. The government and all the inhabitants of this earth, that's what verse 2 tells us, will worship the beast. And I want you to notice for a moment how similar is the situation that we are living in today. That in many parts of the world today, politics, economy, and religion are also closely intertwined together. Am I correct? They are inseparable. They are interdependent. No politician can control his country without controlling the economy and the religion. And for that reason, you find many times when some crisis happens, the president will come up or the prime minister will come up and say, "Oh, our hearts are with those who are going through these difficult times, and let's pray for them. We are praying for you." Can you imagine the president, you know, during the tribulation coming up with boils, you know, on his face and trying to plaster it and cover up the boils? And then he says, "We are praying for you." And hello, if you can pray, then why don't you pray for yourself? Why are there boils on your face? Who are you praying to? That's the key, isn't it? That's the big question. And today we find politics, economy, and religion, they are all in bed together. And I just want to make a point here, and that you and I, we should always wake up every morning and thank God that we are living here in Singapore, where there is a separation of the state and religion, where the government doesn't tell us what we can believe in. We have the freedom to worship without fear or threats. So I hope you do, because every morning I wake up, I'm so thankful that I have the freedom of worship. Let me just tell you that this August I'm going to get a medal on National Day. I'm not. But this is the truth. And you and I must look around us, and we see that today there are many countries around us that do not have the freedom of worship, even though they claim they do, but they actually do not. And the Antichrist understands this perfectly. He will be the political leader, yes. But you and I, we're going to find out later that he truly has no interest in religion. But initially, because the Antichrist needed the support of the false prophet to unify the people. And this is where we see this in the next verse. The angel, verse 3, the angel carried me away in the spirit into a desert. There I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had 7 heads and 10 horns. Immediately, John was transported to a desert. We don't know which desert, but it's just a deserted place, a wilderness. And there he saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had 7 heads and 10 horns. And we know straight away that this beast is the Antichrist. We find that in Revelation chapter 13. Read it up. That's the same description for the Antichrist, who is the political leader. And in verse 3, we're told that this woman, who's the prostitute, is sitting on the beast. It means that this beast is supporting her. And it could also mean that the prostitute is controlling, or so it seems. It would appear that he's con- the false prophet is controlling the Antichrist. And we're going to learn more, and we're going to get into more details in the following verses. All right, just be patient. Stay with me. Verse 4 tells us a little bit more about this woman. Verse 4 tells us that the woman was dressed in purple and scarlet and was glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. She had a golden cup in her hand filled with abominable things and the filth of her adulteries. Verse 4 tells us that this prostitute, this false prophet, is well-dressed, appears to be rich. There is this outward appearance. And with this appearance, this false prophet wants to deceive, entice, seduce everyone to give the impression that she's doing very well. Just look at me. All right? And you and I know how easily today you and I, we get deceived by appearance. Am I correct? We look at somebody who's well-dressed, well-heeled, drives a nice car, and immediately we say, wow, this person must be doing very well. But if you have a pastor who comes and he comes in a shirt that is bought in China that costs maybe about 10 Sing dollars. Oh, poor church mouse. He's, nothing good can come out of him. And this is the mindset today. And Satan knows it so well. He uses the young, the attractive, the sexy, and the successful, the progressive, and the upwardly mobile people to seduce us, to deceive us. And this has somehow crept into our churches. That's how we measure success, by the number of people, by the number of chairs, by maybe how much you have in your bank account. But you and I know too well that God doesn't measure us that way. And I'm going to shock you, all right? Because I'm going to put it simply to you that God measures us by putting us next to Jesus Christ. Next to Jesus Christ. And you say, whoa, who's going to measure up? God expects us to measure up. Because Jesus says, be like me. And when we look at the life of Jesus, he spent time studying the word. He spent time praying. He spent time reaching out to people. How am I faring in those areas? And that's a question God is going to ask me one day when I stand before him. How am I doing? How are you doing in those areas? And you will have to answer to God on your own. I can't do that for you because I will have to struggle myself. All right. So understand this, that Jesus, throughout his whole life, the Bible tells us, he himself said, I have completed everything that the Father has sent me to do. Everything. I can't say that, but I can start today. So can you. We are also told she had a golden cup in her hand, and we would have thought that, wow, a golden cup inside must contain some very expensive vintage wine. But really, the Bible tells us it contains abominations and filth. And it is strange for us to think that abomination is something that's disgusting to God, completely and utterly disgusting to God. And yet it is contained in this golden cup. How strange. But Jeremiah throws some light about this golden cup. Jeremiah 51. All right. That's her. All right. But it's just a drawing, all right? That's her with a golden cup, right? Sitting on the beast with 7 heads and 10 horns. Jeremiah 51 verse 7 tells us, Babylon has been a golden cup in the hand of the Lord, intoxicating all the earth. The nations have drunk of her wine, therefore the nations are going mad. Even though the false prophet is the one who's doing the seducing, but Jeremiah is saying that Babylon, or this false prophet, has been a golden cup in the hand of the Lord. With all her evil and all her filth, this prostitute has poisoned the minds of the people till their minds are dim. Their minds are unable to reason. But yet, we see here, Jeremiah is telling us that God is in control. God is using Babylon to bring about the downfall of Satan and his plans. So, in this cup, we see only death, we see destruction. Nothing good is going to come out from that golden cup the prostitute has in her hand. There's something else that verse 5 tells us about her. This title was written on her forehead, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of abominations, of the abominations of the earth. Wow. There's something written on her forehead, and we do know from history that it was a practice during their time for prostitutes to wear a headband with their name on it. Why? I don't really know. All right. Maybe to identify so people will know their names and come back and look for them. I really don't know the reason. But it was a practice then. And here, God is calling her the mother of prostitutes and the mother of the abominations of the earth, the most disgusting thing on the earth. She is the mother. She is the source. She is the person who gave birth to all these terrible things. And going back again to Genesis 10, we said earlier that Nimrod was the founder of Babylon. It's all started at the site of the Tower of Babel. Now, the Tower of Babel is just one huge tower going up. And apparently, they did very well. They went up pretty high. How high? There are a lot of debates, all right? But what we need to know is that the word Babel means confusion, because God came down and confused their language. And after that, Babylon actually grew in power and became a world empire under Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar lived some 600 years before Jesus Christ. That's just to put into perspective for some of you. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar, his reign and the history of Babylon, it became the background for the book of Daniel, if you're studying Daniel. So Babylon really stands for all false religions. And Babylon, at the mention of the word Babylon, Babylon represents men living without God. Men living without God. So that's what Nimrod was. He wanted to live without God. And from Babylon until today, you and I can see that there is just one world religion taking shape even as we speak. There are many people who are trying to bring different religions together. And how are they going to come together? They must have some common rules, common understanding. And the understanding is this: it doesn't matter what you believe. You will always be right. Just believe something and you will be right. And that's the one world religion we have today. And you listen to crazy people like Oprah Winfrey who will say, God is a force. He is everywhere and he can do anything that you like. Just tell him, he will do it. That's God. He is God as long as he do what I say. And that's Oprah Winfrey. And she became God. She decided who is God. And we have one word that is constantly thrown about today, and it's such a dangerous word. It's called tolerance. Tolerance. We must tolerate. We must respect, yes. All right? But when people do not believe in the true God as we believe that the Bible is true, then we must take time to tell them. We cannot force them. But to tolerate and say that every religion is right, every road leads to heaven, that's a lie from the pit of hell. And people who believe in that, it is because they have rejected the light. Excuse me. Now, Babylon was not important only politically, but also religiously. All right. And I'm going to take you very quickly through just a very quick history of the development of religions, starting from Babylon. And we said that Nimrod founded Babylon. You can read up Genesis 10. And we're told that he had a wife. This is from extra-biblical sources. His wife is Semiramis, right? Semiramis. You've got to pronounce it correctly, all right? Semiramis. It's not too difficult, is it? All right. Semiramis started or founded a secret religious sect, and she came up with a lot of different rites, rituals, and all that. And according to legend, Semiramis, she became the first high priestess. And she claimed she miraculously conceived as a virgin while she was still a virgin. She conceived, and then she gave birth to a baby boy. And that baby boy, his name is Tammuz. Another very common, familiar name. I won't say common, but familiar, because this name is part of the Hebrew calendar. All right. And when Tammuz grew up, legend has it that he was killed by a wild boar. And Semiramis cried for 40 days. And because of her tears, Tammuz was resurrected. He came back to life. And because of his resurrection, they instituted a feast called the Feast of Ishtar. Remember the name Ishtar? Where did we see it earlier on? At the gate. Remember? All right. Ishtar. All right. And from this feast, it started a cultic worship. And this cultic worship is called the worship of the mother and child. The mother and child. And this spread throughout the whole world. And the mother, Semiramis, also came to be called the Queen of Heaven. And there are many drawings found during the Babylonian period, and which is hundreds of years before Jesus. And the drawing is of a mother carrying a child, and they have got halos, right, representing Semiramis and Tammuz. And this was later adapted, used for the elevation of the worship of Mary. And Semiramis was also called the Mother of God. And so is Mary in the Roman Catholic traditions. And this is how you and I can trace back the beginning of many, many religions. And this feast was observed over a period of 40 days. And it was celebrated with painted or colored eggs. And that's how we get our Easter eggs. And the practice of observing a certain feast for 40 days is today practiced in some Christian circles. We call it the Lent, the period of the Lent. All right. So we do have Anglicans also observing this. It's 40 days also. But in the Bible, it's very clear. Jeremiah and Ezekiel condemn the observance of Ishtar. It's very clear, right? Ezekiel 8, Jeremiah 7. Read it up for yourself. And the worship of the Queen of Heaven. Now, the false religion coming from Babylon, while it started there, but as it travels over to other parts of the world, the names actually took a change. But the practice is similar. So today we find that to the Babylonians, it is Semiramis and Tammuz. And we're talking about the mother and child cult, where they worship the mother and child. And to the Canaanites, it is called Ashtaroth and Baal. And to the Romans, it's Venus and Cupid. To the Greeks, it's Eros and Aphrodite. And to the Egyptians, it's Isis and Horus. And these are names which some we don't commonly come across, but if you do, then you understand the origin. And this cult worship ended up in Rome. And it stopped there. Because when the Roman emperor came into power, he elevated himself to a position and he used the term Pontifex Maximus, which means the keeper of the bridge. Why the keeper of the bridge? I don't understand. Apparently those times, maybe the bridge is important, all right? It's important to keep the bridge. I really don't know this part. But when the rule of the Roman emperors came to an end, the bishop of Rome took over the title and all the responsibilities of the Roman emperor. And we have the term pontiff today, all right? Or we call him the Pope. And the word pontiff, let me just give you the definition, and I didn't come up with this definition. Oh, I don't have it here. All right, let me just read to you. Pontiff comes from a former title of the pagan high priest at Rome. It's a pagan high priest, later used of popes and occasionally of other bishops, and now confined exclusively to the Pope. To the Pope. So there we have it, the origin of the pagan festivals, the names and the titles, how they have changed with time and cultures. And while it is true that our Christmas, 25th of December, has its origin in a pagan origin, it's true, all right? And the Christmas tree and the log cake all has a pagan origin. But you and I will use this as opportunities to remember the birth of Jesus and also to share the gospel. And we must never lose sight of the true biblical reason for celebrating Christmas, Good Friday, Easter, minus the eggs. All right, let's move on. Verse 6, chapter 17. I saw the woman was drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. When I saw her, I was greatly astonished. Here, verse 6 tells us that the woman killed many, many of the saints. And the word saints would imply that they were believers before the tribulation. But also during the tribulation, I'm sure they were called saints too. But those who, and the blood of those who bore testimony, in some translations, they use the word martyrs. So those who were killed before the tribulation and those who were killed during the tribulation. And I believe that throughout history, false religions have killed many, many followers of Jesus. Verse 7 and 8, chapter 17. Then the angel said to me, why are you astonished? I will explain to you the mystery of the woman and of the beast. she writes, which has the seven heads and ten horns. Verse 8, the beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come out of the abyss and go to his destruction. The inhabitants of the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world, will be astonished when they see the beast, because he once was, now is not, and yet will come. John was greatly astonished, and the word astonished could be taken to mean amazed or puzzled or shocked or confused. Confused because he saw such a glamorous woman, but yet the evil and filth that's coming out of her confused him, shocked him. And the angel came to him and said, why are you astonished? Why are you confused? I will explain to you the relationship between this woman and the beast she rides. And verse 8 tells us a bit more about the beast. The beast which you saw, he said, once was in the past. He was in the past, history, and is not, and will come out. And the verse ended in the same way. And what it means here is that this beast, you would remember he had a fatal head wound. And apparently he died. And by some form of deception, he became alive again. So all the inhabitants of the world who did not know Jesus looked with astonishment. They were sold. They were convinced that the Antichrist has got great powers. Verse 9 tells us, now this calls for a mind of wisdom. The seven heads are seven hills on which the woman sits. Why did the angel say this calls for a mind with wisdom? It means that we're going to look at one of the most difficult two verses in the Bible, all right? And it requires wisdom, and only God can reveal it to you. And he went on to say, the seven heads are seven hills on which the woman sits. Seven hills, and we do know that it has always been used to refer to the city of Rome. And the woman who sits, this prostitute, this false prophet, who sits on this seven heads, it simply means that she will rule Rome. And is this a direct reference to the Roman Catholic Church ruling from the Vatican City? I don't know. Most people would think of it that way. Take a look at this quotation. In fact, there is a map that goes with it. All right. This is actually the river Tiber. All right, the river Tiber. And these are the seven hills. And Rome was built on these seven hills. But the Vatican is on the other side of the river, the Vatican City. How many of you have been to the Vatican City? All right. You have? All right. Did you kiss the Pope's hand? All right. Good. I'm glad for you. kidding. All right. But there is a quote from the Catholic Encyclopedia itself that says, it is the city of Rome called the City of Seven Hills. They themselves acknowledge that the entire area of the Vatican State proper is now confined. It is in the city of Rome, what they are saying is that in the city of Rome, that now the whole of the Vatican State, Vatican is a country by itself. Do you all know that? It is a country by itself. It has its own rules, its own army, makes its own laws. All right. And according to the Catholic Encyclopedia, they are saying that the Vatican is part of Rome. And when did that happen? It happened in AD 848 or thereabout when Pope Leo IV passed a decree to include the Vatican as part of Rome. So there you have it. Is this where the false prophet, the prostitute, will be sitting? I'm inclined to believe in that, all right? At least at the moment, it would appear that way. But the city of Rome, in that city, during the time of the false prophet, the prostitute, when she's ruling, verse 10 tells us there are also seven kings. There were seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. But when he does come, he must remain for a little while. So here it is probably better to read it as the prostitute ruling from Rome on the city built on seven hills. But Rome will also be ruled by seven kings. And some Bible scholars have taken these seven kings to mean the seven Roman emperors, starting from Julius Caesar to Caligula and ending with Nero and Domitian. But I don't see that here. But I think if we look at this, it would be more probable to take the seven kings to represent the seven world empires. The seven world empires that have impacted Israel, or they were a part of Israel's history. And who are these five that have fallen? They are Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. And this is all in the past. They have fallen. And one is, there is one power now in the present. And who is that? During the time of John's writing, it was Rome. So there you have number 6, 5 and 1. And who's the last one? The last one has not yet come. And we really believe that it is the revived Roman Empire. And that is the future. So in this verse alone, we have the picture of the past, the present, and the future. All right? And we are told, and this is important, why I am inclined to take this view, because verse 11 tells us that the beast who once was and now is not is an eighth king. Wow. Now this is getting really confusing, and it really threw me off, because aren't there just seven? How come you keep adding? Lord, you know, I'm confused enough. All right. But actually this verse 11 helps us to understand better. And the second part of verse 11 tells us he belongs to the seven and is going to his destruction. So the beast, who's number eight, the eighth king, is the Antichrist. And he has his origin from the Roman Empire. He belongs to the seven. The seven is the Roman Empire. Am I correct? All right. So many people believe because of this that he is part of the old Roman Empire. And furthermore, in verse 12, chapter 17, we are told, the ten horns you saw are ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but who for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast. Now, we remember that these ten horns, it reminds us of our study in Daniel about the ten toes that is connected to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And the ten kings ruling over the revived Roman Empire will receive, according to verse 12, they will receive authority from Satan, just as the beast did. And they will rule alongside with the beast, but only for a little while. Because if you look at verse 10 tells us that the seventh kingdom, the revived Roman Empire, or the ten toes in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, will not last long. It will not last long, verse 10 tells us. And here again in verse 12, it's repeated to us again that they will rule only for 1 hour. And after which, the eighth king, who is the Antichrist, he will kill all the rest. He will just eliminate them. And he will set up the empire of the Antichrist himself. He's not interested in religion. He's just pretending. He's just using the false prophet to bring together the people. And before that happens, before the ten kings are killed, we're told that they will form an alliance with the Antichrist. Verse 13. They have one purpose, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. They will, these ten kings will submit to the leadership of the Antichrist and form an alliance for a specific purpose. And what is that purpose? The next verse tells us, verse 14. They will make war against the Lamb. But the Lamb will overcome them because He is Lord of Lords and King of Kings. And with Him, notice this part, with Him will be His called, chosen and faithful followers. Go back a bit. What is the purpose? It's to fight a final battle with Jesus Christ. And this we will see at the end of the tribulation. And we see here a picture forming, a war building up, and man is plunging to his final destruction. And he didn't even know it. How stupid of him. But verse 14 tells us, Jesus, who is greater than Satan and all his demonic forces, Jesus will totally annihilate them, and he will wipe them out with one swipe. And the good news is in verse 14, it tells us here, who is coming with Jesus? They are his called, chosen, faithful followers. Are you followers of Jesus? We should be. And we're included here. Verse 15 tells us, then the angel said to me, the waters you saw where the prostitute sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages. The beast and the ten horns you saw will hate the prostitute, and they will bring her to ruin and leave her naked, and they will eat her flesh and burn her with fire. The beast will show his true colors. When the false prophet is no longer useful to him, they will turn on the prostitute. And they will destroy her, and they will eat her flesh, and they will burn her with fire. And it is the same people today with politics and religion, isn't it? The Antichrist will support the false prophet for as long as he is useful. And he will help. And you may ask, why would he want to help the prostitute to gain worldwide control? And the reason is this, and I hope you listen very carefully, because that will help you to notice what is going on around us today. Why would the Antichrist want to help the false prophet and allow the false prophet to sit on him, appearing to be under the false prophet's control? And the reason is this, that because at that time, the world is going through a terrible period of plagues. They were suffering, they know it's supernatural plagues. And they themselves know very well, the world knows that they have to turn to the false prophet because they cannot find any hope or help from politics or economies. Money is not going to help them. Politics is not going to help them. The only way is to find some religious solutions. That is why they turn to the false prophet initially. And the Antichrist have to play along. But the moment will come when he's no longer useful, the Antichrist will destroy and kill the false prophet. I just want to stop here for a moment and just ask you to think carefully. How many were the moments in your own life and in my own life that we've been completely deceived into following Satan, thinking that he can help us? He cannot. And he's not interested in you. He only seeks to steal, kill, and destroy you. And the moment you are no longer useful to him, he will drop you like a hot potato and drag you to hell with him. Wise up. Look around us. That's how Satan deals with many people. And he turns on his own people too. But God doesn't. God cares for you. And from this, we also learn from this chapter, we're going to see how, look at who's directing the killing of this prostitute. Who knows what's going to happen before even it happens? Verse 17 tells us, "For God has put into their hearts to accomplish his purpose by agreeing to give the beast their power to rule until God's words are fulfilled." Isn't it amazing? Isn't it great for us to realize that God is in control, full control of everything? And he's behind the scene, even though sometimes we don't feel him. And you and I today, don't think for a moment that God has deserted you. He's absent. He's not listening. He is, and he's interested. And he wants us to walk with him so that we can be a part of his purpose. Because verse 17 tells us very clearly that God's words will be fulfilled. God's words will be fulfilled. Verse 18. "The woman you saw is the great city that rules over the kings of the earth." You may say, wait a minute, Pastor John. I thought the woman in verse 17 already died. How come verse 18, there's the woman? Is it another woman? Or is it the same woman? It's another woman. And in fact, verse 18 is so important, because verse 18 really is a transition verse that tells us that the woman, this woman represents the political system, the literal city of Babylon, where the Antichrist will place his headquarters, he will rule from during the tribulation. And we will look at this more in our next study in chapter 18. I'm just going to close and again challenge all of you. Don't be deceived by Satan. He does not have your interest in his heart. And many people today live like the Babylonians. They want to live without God. They don't want God to control their lives. And they're messing it up big time and they don't even realize it. And they think that Satan is on their side. Satan is not. He's the great deceiver. Even though yesterday you and I, we have got wisdom, some, not much, and we've made much progress in many areas in our lives, but we still need God. We still need God. Don't be arrogant. You and I need to go to God daily, study his word, and start to live for Him. Our world today is in a cesspool. If you understand what's a cesspool, it's where all the waste goes to. That's where the world is. But you and I, God has called us to live above it and to live for Him so that God can use us to bring His word to the rest of the world. I hope you will commit your life to doing that, because one day you and I, we're going to stand next to Jesus, and that's how God is going to measure us. I'm going to hand the time back to Jonathan. And as we look at today's passage, it is true. Whatever that's not of God, He will destroy. We're going to see more in our next study.